All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuckettes? How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome. Well, sit down. Welcome. How are you? Everyone's welcome here. Okay, I don't know how you're going to take it, but you're certainly welcome to sit down and listen for a little while to what we do here. Why don't I tell you who the guest is before I start rambling? It is the amazing Edie Patterson, one of the most inspired comic actresses that I know of. You've seen her in The Righteous Gemstones. That's the new one. That's on HBO. But she was also in Vice Principals. She's done other stuff. But her performance in Vice Principals and now in this Righteous Gemstones, all the Danny McBride stuff. It's just, she's the best. She's so funny, so raw, so emotionally present, and so great. So funny in a very real way. I met her a couple years ago, down in Highland Park, and I was so excited, and it took us this long to get her on the show. So she's here, and I'm excited about it. We're going to talk about The Righteous Gemstones, but other stuff too. So that's exciting, right? I'm excited. Oh my God, I'm starting to be able to think again relatively clearly with some follow-through since the nicotine incident, since the incident of me stopping it day 11 this morning. And, you know, it comes like there's still that moment where, you know, I eat something or I get done exercising or I wake up or I, I'm about to eat something or I get in my car or I make there's that moment after and before I do anything where I kind of want a nicotine lozenge. There's that moment all the time, every second of every day where I kind of want a little bit of that thing that I like that's not great for me. Whew, I'll be at the Vogue Theater in Vancouver tomorrow night. I believe it might be sold out. Then I'll be at the Moore Theater in Seattle on Saturday. There might be some tickets for that. More importantly, ticket-wise, I'm at JFL 42 in Toronto on September 19th. I believe that's a Thursday. Could use some folks there just so I don't feel embarrassed. Look, I don't give a fuck one way or the other. Some of these halls are big. I know who I am. There are those that like me. There are those that don't know me. And there are those that don't get it. And then there are those that don't like me at all. So those that like me, you know, it's not most people in the world, but there's enough of them. And I just like them all to come. That all those that like me that live in Toronto, I'd like you to come out on September 19th, if you could. Thank you. Nice to talk to you. The Vic in Chicago on September 20th. I'm sure that is sold out. Now, this is the other one. The Masonic Temple in Detroit, Motor City, on September 21st. That's a Saturday, I believe. That one needs a little. I don't know what's going on in Detroit. Could have something to do with the entire city was decimated and it is now slowly rebuilding into something amazing. I don't know what it is. I don't think the tickets are too expensive. I would think that I would have some fans in Detroit, but I don't know what's happened there. I don't know who's there. I don't know who my people are there. But again, there are those that like me, those that don't know me, those that don't get it, and those that fucking can't stand me. Just want the people that like me to come. And if they live in Detroit, a good night to do that or surrounding areas would be on September 21st. I'll be at the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis, one of my favorite theaters and favorite cities, on September 22nd. Always love going there. Okay? I think that's probably doing okay, but there might be tickets. I don't know. I told you what I need. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for ticket info and all of my tour dates for the rest of the year. I'm very happy. I got a lot of emails about Buddy Guy. Buddy Guy, it was an honor for me to meet him as well. I'm so glad that so many blues fans reached out, shared their stories about seeing Buddy, about how wonderful it was to hear him share the old tales of the guys that us blues people love. I'm just glad that people got off on that. There was a couple questions. It's sort of like people asking, why didn't you jam with Buddy? You know, I don't lean on that as much as I used to. It's not as easy to record people up here, but also like I started to realize like it's sort of a big ask. You know, sometimes the last thing these guys want to do is not only play in the middle of the day on a thing, but have some stranger that they don't know anything about or if he can play or not play with them. So the ask wasn't put forward, and that's just the way it goes. I would have liked to have played. I would have been intimidated to play, but I certainly would have tried to rise to the occasion. Didn't happen, though. Nonetheless, great talk. Also, I'm very thrilled about the reactions to my Dale Baran conversation. That was an important conversation. It was a lot of important information. Some of you thought that I talked a lot. It was because I was excited about the book. And I do talk a lot when I'm excited. And I wanted to make sure to get a good arc in there. And basically the impulse was to get engaged. And if you enjoyed some of that information and the nice narrative of it and the history of it, buy Dale's book, It Came From Something Awful, to get the full story. And that's really what the plan was, outside of talking to the man that did the research, did the journalism. But it's also, you know, we only went so deep, and, you know, it is illuminated in that book, the entire history of the army of unfuckable hate nerds, but also just the place that fantasy plays, you know, in the minds of younger people, some ill-equipped to deal. Oh, that was another email I wanted to read. Hold on. And I think this is important, and I don't know that I thought about it or framed it like this, but I do think this is pertinent as well, and I think it is worth reading. Subject line, Dale Baran podcast. Hi, I'm listening to your podcast. Fascinating and terrifying. I have a son who fits the profile to a T of an otaku hikakomori. Something you both didn't really address is that there is not always a lot of anger with this group. In my son's case, he is painfully shy and lacks social skills. He's not angry. He is paralyzed with fear and anxiety. It's easier for him to live in a fantasy world. He is also on the spectrum. Many of these kids are likely on the autism Asperger's spectrum. I think an important message that is not addressed here is mental illness. There needs to be some sensitivity around this and not just focus on the hate and nihilism and anger. There is much more going on here. But thank you. I do look forward to reading the book. Thank you, Tanya. So that I think that's right. I think that was not something, that was not where my brain was thinking. Obviously, we were characterizing this generation of people in a certain way, you know, in terms of socially ostracized or nihilistically compelled by their own community orientation towards the futility of the modern world, if that sentence made any sense. But I do think, obviously, Tanya is correct in that there is clearly, in a lot of cases, mental illness, and there are some, you know, benefits in terms of how fantasy works. Like my nephew is a good example. He's a pretty nerdy kid. He has some issues, and he spends a lot of time, you know, in the gaming world and also in some fantasy, platforms or boards where he engages with people, and it seems to be a fairly fun, safe, sociable way. It's got him out in the world a bit, meeting with people who enjoy making up, animals, and dressing up as things in a seemingly innocent and communal way. And it's helped him a great deal in terms of meeting people. So, yeah, I guess the framing of how we were talking about it was pretty awful and frightening. But I do think that this is right. Subject line, clarity at last. Dear Mark, I've never had clarity about my 7-year friendship that recently evolved into a failed 3-month relationship until I heard your podcast today with Dale Baran. Jay is the textbook example of the hate nerd army's transition over time. In his case, a mutation from a gregarious, libertarian-leaning, nerdy college student to right-wing spouting white guy mad at the establishment for keeping him down, fucking miserable at his job, the pseudo-intellectual alpha male nonsense, the need to self-medicate with pot daily just to deal with reality, the inability to leave the fantasy world behind for even one day, All of that really hit home for me. It explains so much about his stunted emotional maturity, his inability to empathize, and his ultimate refusal to come to terms with his feelings for any of the women in his life. He is the product of parents who had no idea what their kid was doing, spending so much time in their room on the internet. I can't imagine I'm alone in this revelation. And to be honest, I'm kind of grateful for the company. Thanks again, V. Thank you for sharing this. I think this is an important side of it, that yeah, of course there's more people out there like you. Of course. You know, talking about the nerd thing, about my own nerd, I've had to question my own nerdism recently because I've been, you know, after being a little bit hard on the nerd community, I'm going to use that word because they use it, and I'll say this not in a bad way. In the nerd communities, the several different, the nerd tribes, there are several nerd tribes of all different kinds. They may all fall under the broader umbrella of nerd, but, you know, there are more powerful, you know, nerd tribes than others, and some of them are very specific. But, I mean, the question is, the nerd fan, you know, am I one of them? And the last show, I argued that I'm not because of my lack of follow-through, which I still believe is true. Because a couple of people pointed out my record obsession, and then some people pointed out how I talk about guitars. Now, I understand that, but people who are saying that are clearly not real record nerds, because a real record nerd would know that I'm kind of a fucking amateur record nerd. And a real guitar nerd would definitely know that I'm way not a guitar nerd. I know a few things about a few instruments. I don't know nothing about pedals. I don't know nothing about amps. I know the things that I have and like. Same with records. I buy things that I like and want to learn about. But it's really sort of a learning process. It's not a collector obsession. It's not a completist obsession. I am sort of a completist with things. Like if I like a band, I have been known in the past to buy all of their recorded stuff. But the reason I think I'm not fundamentally on the nerd spectrum is because it all kind of wears off, man. It wears out for me. You know, I was pretty nerdy about cast iron pans for a while. It passed. The boots thing. I was pretty nerdy about boots. No more. I was pretty kind of weirdly obsessive about, you know, pants, jeans. That's gone. You know, and the record thing is starting to sort of slow down and make me reflect and want to get rid of some of them. It just, it never sticks. It's not a lifelong commitment. And I think to really be truly a nerd, and I'm saying this in a good way, not a bad way. I'm using the word in a proactive way. It has to be a lifelong engagement that does not relent until you're too old and tired to do it. It's a commitment. It's a grounding element, whatever your particular obsessive interest is. I just don't think I'm quite that. I don't have the focus, and I'm too much of a searcher in some ways. You know, if it doesn't work after a couple of years, I'm moving on. If it's not still filling the widening gyre inside of me, the falcon has lost touch with the falconer. Oh, I just watched this Danny Houston movie called The Last Photograph. I'm going to talk to him next week about that. Danny Houston, the actor and director, son of John Houston. Also next week, I'm going to talk to Bruce Dern. Yeah. Yeah, I did do that. I did talk to Bruce Dern. Yes, I did. So, listen, Edie Patterson is here. I love her. I also, for some reason, was not, I was talking about Danny McBride, but I was saying somebody else's name. Yeah, that happened a couple of times, and it took a couple of times for her to correct me out of politeness. So this is me talking to Edie Patterson about The Righteous Gemstones, which she is a star of on HBO. New episode, Sunday nights. I love her, and I got to talk to her, and here it is. How's that feel? Can you see me?
Good. I think maybe stay on because I have a giant head.
I have a giant head. Has that been a liability for you? Have you been, you just know it?
I just know it, and then I've been to like Gorin Brothers or whatever.
Oh, the hat place?
The hat place.
Yeah.
And I figure out like Oh, wow. I'm an extra large at Gordon Brothers.
Extra large men's head?
I mean, yeah, just a head.
7 3/8 kind of deal?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Wow, that is a big head.
Yeah.
I have that head.
Yeah. And there's a lot, there's a weird amount of hair on my head, but yeah. I just have a giant head.
But the thing is, when I lose weight, I can see my big head. Like when I'm like, I can, when I see pictures of myself and yeah. shit or on TV, I'm like, that's not, I look like a what is it? A bobblehead.
Right.
But I get hung up on it, but no one seems to notice. I get hung up a lot. Do you ever do that? I mean, I'm watching myself on Glow and I'm like, I got a little skinny and I don't know if like that expression's not right. Do you watch yourself act?
Yeah, I do.
How's that go for you?
It's weird. I would say like the first time at least.
Yeah.
I've got like full like horror movie fingers over my eyes and like, because it's the same stuff and like it takes me watching it once.
Yeah.
To then watch it again and right. go, okay, let me watch actually what I was doing.
Right, integrate.
It's the first time I watch it like an asshole going like, oh, my dark circles. Yeah. I look weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And
exactly.
It's so shallow and lame. And
yeah, but that's the surface. Face.
Yeah, I hate it.
And then you watch it again, you're like, there, I'm all right.
Yeah, then I dig it.
Yeah, and then the third time, it's like, no, I'm a fucking genius. Look at me. I'm a genius. Holy shit. I had no idea. It took me 3 viewings. Yeah, I've got to watch myself 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
So where I ran into you in Highland Park at Cafe de Leche. I was very excited to see you. It was like a couple years ago.
That made my year, man.
Come on.
Honestly, I was like, holy shit, Mark Maron knows who I am.
I was excited. I was like, I know you.
That was really nice.
You're hilarious. It was?
Yeah.
And then now that was
really
only took a couple years to get you over here somehow.
Yeah.
How long have you been over there?
At the end of 2013, we got replaced.
So pretty new.
Pretty new.
But
you
not
were there
that
a long
new.
Time.
Well, I mean, I was there in 2004, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
I started.
Yeah.
And then, I always liked it okay, but mm-hmm. I just got to the point where I wasn't really fixing my house. It wasn't getting any younger, my house.
Mm-hmm.
It was haunted with a lot of emotional, no, I haunted it.
Oh.
It's not a previous, it's not a previous owner haunting. It was just me and my life. There were different periods of my life haunting the place.
So it just felt weird.
Well,
and
just
heavy.
All I know is I do not miss it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the original garage was what it was, but like, you know, after people came and they're like, this is cool, and then they'd leave, I'm like, it's falling apart. I got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You came from Texas?
Came from Texas.
In 2013?
14? I came here like early 2000s.
So. Let's walk through it then.
Yeah, let's walk through
it. Let's do the thing, because I think you're very funny. You're one of those people, and I don't get this a lot. I don't know what it means. It's not a bad thing, but like but I just connected with you immediately. I like got it. There was a rawness to it, and I'm like, that person, I understand. I don't know. Like you put it all out there, and it's not a crush, but you know what I mean.
Well, dude, I'll take it, because honestly, that's why it made my year when you talked to me, because I was like, oh, dude, I get where he's coming from, and there's a rawness in what you do that I was like, oh my God, he sees me.
I think that was it. There's not many people that happens with, but I'm always excited when it happens. I don't quite know what to do with it. I always, I champion those people. You know, like Bamford's another one. And I think I got a thing for people that can't help themselves but be, that exude that. You know, there's like, there's nothing you're going to do to stifle it.
No. Somebody gave me a coaster.
Yeah.
With this.
A helpful coaster?
A helpful coaster.
Uh-huh.
With this Janis Joplin quote on it. And
She's another one.
But yeah, the quote on it says, if something like, I'm going to bastardize a little bit, but it basically says, like, if I hold back, I'm no good. And I was oh, fuck. That's the stuff right there.
Yeah. But it's weird because. I mean, that is the stuff, and she is one of those people. I have felt that same thing where you're sort of, you watch her and you're like, wow, this is amazing, but I'm a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, that's my favorite stuff to watch, too, is like stuff that's kind of cringy, that you feel like kind of scared for the person.
Yeah,
but you know they're still in control of it. That's kinda. My favorite stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how in control she was, but
But she was channeling, for sure.
Yeah, and those people like her, like, you know, whatever we see, they got a lot of road miles in, those people in the 60s that died young, like Hendrix. I mean, he was out there a lot.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they toured the fuck out of this country and the world. But anyway, so where'd you grow up in Texas?
I grew up in Texas City.
What is that? Where is
that? Down by Galveston.
It's down by the water?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, like 40 minutes from Houston, but down by the water. But it's the brown water.
Yeah, no, not good water.
No.
That whole area down there, I've only driven through there once, and it wasn't great to me.
It's weird. Yeah. Where I'm from is, I mean, I'm happy I grew up there, maybe who I am, but it's full of refineries.
Right.
And
Just a lot of machinery off the highway.
Yeah, it's one of those places that as you're driving in at night, it straight up looks like Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just lit giant machines, tanks, pipes, things. And I always look and go like, are there people there right now? And when you drive at night, is there someone working that
stuff? Yeah, is there somebody like watching that flame? That's burning chemicals into all of us.
Is someone on top of the flame situation and they just let that go? Do you have brothers and sisters?
We got one sister, yeah.
Older?
She lives in Denver, younger.
Yeah?
Yeah, she lives in Denver with her dude and they're super into mountain climbing and
healthy people. They're Colorado.
They're just kind of badasses.
There's a fitness kind of very focused, seemingly enlightened bunch of fitness driven white people. In Colorado, that you're sort of like, is this a Christian thing or is this just a fitness thing?
Theirs is neither, but okay. I know that thing you're talking about.
I can't tell if I should be scared here or that these people are good people that are just in shape.
And are they going to change me?
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a whole other contingent of just shit-faced weed smokers.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked in Denver, man. Denver is like, because of the altitude, it's just a shit show at night. There's just people falling in the streets.
Yeah, dude. I've been a visitor twice, and I don't feel good when I'm there. I feel like the altitude like messes me up mentally.
Oh yeah, your brain gets fucked. Your brain farts, and you can't think of words, and you know you have moments where you're like, I can't talk right.
Totally. It's or I would have these weird moments of like, am I sad? Why do I feel sad?
Well, that's every day for me.
Well, fair enough.
What is this feeling I have? Is it a good one? I don't think it is a good one. Maybe it is a good one. I'm just not used to it.
Mine are usually later. If it's the sads, it's usually like later I go, oh, fuck, I was pretty depressed that month. Yeah. But when I'm in it, I'm just like going.
Well, yeah, because I'm one of those people where it's sort of, I think I've gotten so used to, I don't think I'm depressed, I think I'm anxious, but I don't know. Like when they told me I got this vaccine yesterday and she's like, it's going to hurt, you might need to take some aspirin. I'm like, but how much could it hurt? You know what I mean? I mean, because I'm not going to take aspirin for this, but I think my pain threshold's different.
Got
like,
it.
Whether it's depression or what. Like, I can live with it.
Totally.
Because I rationalize it sort of like, I think this is the appropriate feeling.
Yes.
I'm not suicidal, but things aren't great.
And this will end at some point.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Are you a depressive person?
I would say, weirdly.
Yeah.
When I was in the fifth grade, I don't know what this was.
Yeah.
I went through an adult depression that I didn't tell anyone about.
In the fifth grade?
In the fifth grade.
How old are we in fifth grade? 11?
What, 11, 12? Uh-huh. Something like that?
Yeah.
And I still read, but I used to read all the time.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I was reading things that were too adult.
Yeah. Oh, really? I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, just like, I remember reading a separate piece and reading Lord of the Flies and something about...
Well, that right there, Lord of the Flies, I don't even know why they assigned that to kids.
Seriously, it sent me into like an existential, like, what is anything? I used to watch kids playing and go, how do they do that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah. They seem to be forcing it.
Or I was like, how do they feel like they're here? Like, what is, I mean, super existential, weird. And thank God I've never had that again.
Well, what did you tell your parents? I mean, did it
No, I told
pass,
them way or? Later, years and years later.
You just wrote it out?
Yeah, I just wrote it together? Out. I felt afraid to tell them.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand.
And sixth grade came and you're like, I'm okay.
Yeah, I had this weird methodology. I mean, this is going to sound so insane, but I used to like do mantras in my head of things that I knew were real.
Mm-hmm.
Like my bike, I had a Kuwahara, like a BMX bike.
Yeah.
And I used to say like Kuwahara in my head because I knew that was a real thing. I mean, this is so fucked up.
No, it's not. It makes perfect sense.
But I would
sense.
Go like, yeah, okay, that's in the world. I know what that is.
Right, because you got lost in your head.
Yeah, and I would, like having the radio on was helpful because I would feel like, okay, people are alive in the world. This is happening.
I miss that time because I don't have the confidence that exists anymore. Like it used to be like when there were three channels. Mm-hmm. And you just like late at night, you put the TV on, you're like, well, someone's got to be in the control room. So it's me and him right now.
Yeah.
Like, or live radio. You're like, oh, that guy's all right. If I need to call somebody, I can call the radio guy.
Yeah. Like they're up and they're living. Yeah.
But now I don't know. I don't know if anyone's operating anything. So it makes me a little untethered. So you're growing up in Texas City.
Yeah.
And is your dad in the oil business?
No, my dad's a plumber.
Did he work on oil pipes?
Every now and then they'd have a contract at one of the refineries.
Yeah.
They still do. My dad's retired, but my uncle and my cousin still work at Patterson Plumbing, and they'll sometimes have
Patterson Plumbing.
That's right.
In Texas City.
Yeah, man. Shout out. Best dudes in town.
Plumbers are essential.
Yeah, for sure. And feel like I weirdly inherited some. I mean, he never taught me to be a plumber, but there's sometimes stuff will happen in the house that I'm like, just let me look at it for a while. And I feel like I can figure it out because my dad's a plumber.
Do you?
Yeah, sometimes.
Plumbing's dicey. It seems like it should be easy, but it's not.
It's not.
It's sort of like, well, there's where the water comes from. It just goes into all these pipes in the house.
Yeah, very complicated.
Yeah, there's noises that happen.
Yeah, they have to go for like complicated certifications all the time.
Yeah,
like,
but it's essential.
Yeah.
And what'd your mom do?
Teacher. Taught first and fourth grade her whole career.
Really?
Yeah.
And you had your existential meltdown in fifth grade.
I did.
And you couldn't go to your mom, the teacher.
No, I just didn't. I could have. She's very sweet.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you.
I just didn't. It was weird. I used to also have this thing of, I don't know why, I would get afraid to say certain things. Like if something happened when I was in school, like if I got sick or something and needed to call my mom to come get me or to tell her I was going home or something, I'd get that weird like cry in my voice to talk to my mom on the phone from school. I'm like, I don't know, I was just a fucking weird sensitive kid.
That's it. That's why we know each other. But like, did the other kids think you were weird? Or were you able to sort of move through the different things?
Yeah, I was able to move through it. There was a point where there was a little chunk of like maybe somewhere 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, where I felt for sure very different,
right,
than everyone else, and had sort of pulled away from the friend group I was in.
Were you doing like, was there a music? Was there a context to it? Did you model yourself a certain way?
I just felt, I don't know. I just felt different, and I felt like I didn't want to be mean to anyone, and I would see people like be mean to mean to people or blow people off, or I just didn't want to be that. Yeah. So sometimes that equals like you have one friend for 3 years.
Yeah, right.
Shout out Michelle McClellan.
What's she up to?
She's doing great.
Oh, good. Yeah. You still keep in touch with people from fifth grade?
No.
No. I have a couple friends. I grew up
one.
With.
Yeah, one dude.
Yeah.
Scott Elfstrom.
Yeah, he's still in the life.
Yeah,
I have a couple
there.
People that I've known since second grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't talk to them a lot, but I know them.
Yeah.
I grew up in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Yeah. Second grade. David Kleinfeld. He's still in the rotation. I haven't heard from him recently.
Yeah. This dude I don't talk to a bunch every now and then.
Oddly, he gets mad at me when I don't talk to him. Like, I've known him my whole life. We never talked that much for over the last 20 years, but if I do fall out of touch with him, he's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, what do you mean?
Come on, man. I'm busy.
So are you doing any performing?
Yeah.
When did the awkwardness turn into, look, I'm entertaining?
Yeah, that was a weird morphing of a couple of things. Like 7th grade, I think there was this thing called class day, and it was just a big variety show, and me and three other girls wrote like a dating game parody, because there was a channel, I think channel 39 showed, or channel 20
showed the old dating game, or
reruns. We didn't have cable, but we had like the main channels and then three upper channels.
There was only a few of them.
Yeah, so we did this dating game parody, and we all wrote our own parts. And three of us played the guys, and there was one of us playing the girl who's picking from the guys. And there was a jock a nerd. I was the nerd, and there was a, like a businessman or something.
So these are like the that kind of seventh grade perception of the archetypes.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Pocket protector. Right. Glasses. Sure, like lame.
Yeah.
But I noticed at that everything I said was like really landing.
Yeah.
Like that thing where it's happening for the first time, and you're like
the laughs.
Almost your arms are going dead because you're like. What the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The power.
The power. So that's when I really thought, that's the first time I ever thought like, oh, maybe this could be my job.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Making people laugh.
Yeah. Because before that, I didn't know, I knew I liked that. I had always liked making my parents laugh. Yeah, and like, but I was kind of a shy little kid.
Yeah.
And then when we did that, I thought like, oh, right. This is my thing. And I'll make this into what I do.
Yeah.
And then, and then did plays all through high school and stuff.
Yeah, and did the same thing happen? Were you mostly comic or comedic? That was everything.
Yeah. It's
musicals?
So, yeah, that too.
I don't know why I get hung up. I ask everybody about musicals.
That's funny.
And I do, because to me it was the scariest thing in the world. It still is kind of scary, the singing thing.
I thought you could sing.
I can sing, but I can't sing proudly.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I can't remove myself. Like, I'm not going to be like, hello, and like do a dance.
Right.
Like when I sing, I'm usually playing guitar. I got my eyes half closed.
Yep.
Just so I can do it.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I don't have a lot of control over it. But I think I always envied people who could be like fabulous.
It is, yeah, that is a weird next level thing.
Yeah.
Is that like.
Be the showman singer.
Like
you're like the musical people.
Totally.
Where you're just sort of like unabashedly, you know, doing those numbers.
Yeah, and so committed that you're this is real life.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that.
Whoa!
I'm so terrified of it. I think I got to get over it, but I don't know if it's going to happen.
I mean,
right now I'm working on just playing with a small combo. I think that's the next step.
Oh,
for
that's
me.
Awesome.
I don't think doing musicals is going to happen immediately.
What if you like cover your face in some way like Sia does? Wonder if that would help. No, just for your band.
No, I think I can handle the band thing. I'm just like, I'm working towards it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm working on finger picking now, and I got a blood blister on my thumb. Pretty proud.
Oh, man.
Look at that.
That's awesome.
I did some practicing.
That's real deal.
Yeah, I'm working it.
So now do you have to lay off so it doesn't pop on your strings?
No, I'm going to keep doing it until it becomes a hard thing.
Yeah,
a built-in pick. All right, so you're doing all the plays. Are
doing
you popular
plays.
Now? Or are you hanging out with the drama nerdy people?
I'm kind of hanging out with everybody, and they're.
But you're not
a
fucked up kid. You're not, you know, like
really? A real good kid.
Oh yeah,
real good grades.
Uh huh.
No drugs.
Huh.
No drinking.
Oh, good.
Very
for you.
Good.
You avoided it.
Yeah, I avoided it. I wanted to be good. Yeah. I don't know why. I mean, I guess my parents instilled something in me where I
sounds
wanted
like you
to
have pretty
good.
Nice parents.
Yeah, I do have nice parents. Yeah. But I would say, like, I was doing okay. My main friends in drama were, weirdly, you wouldn't think of this as being, like, the dudes in drama, but my main friends were, like, these metal dudes.
No, that makes sense.
That did plays and, like, were obsessed with Monty Python and all had long hair. And were,
yeah,
like,
the metal nerds.
Yeah.
Python guys.
Yeah, I love those.
They play
guys.
D&D too, maybe?
Yep. For sure they did.
Yeah, so that's
and
a
they
specific,
used to ask me and I never went.
That's a certain type of metal dude. That's not the sort of like, you know, we're going to do crank metal dude.
Right.
That's the sort of heightened smart metal dude.
Totally. Yeah, I hung out those with those smart metal dudes. And then, like, the summer before my 11th grade year, I went to visit my friend and my cousin, Jamie.
Yeah.
In Corsicana, Texas. And she's like, I don't know. She just always, like, from the time she was little, it was really cool. Like, every word kind of blends together. Yeah. She's like, got full confidence. Like, kind of like what I found out.
The rest of the interview in that voice.
Yeah, as Jamie. But, like, even as a little kid, before she even knew she was gay, she had, like, almost like lesbian swagger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like. She was always fascinating to me because I was like, how are you that confident? Like, what is this? So I was at her house. We were hanging out and we were making like.
Is it in high school?
Yeah, like the summer after 10th grade.
Yeah.
We were making tapes of like fake talk shows.
Right.
Where we would have a fake call-in show where people would call in with their problems and we would do all the voices. And then I noticed like in between, she would just call people. On the phone and just be like, what's up? What are y'all doing tonight? And I was like, whoa. And just like something would happen. She'd go to some party or like she had all these friends.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck, that's awesome. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be that.
Yeah.
I'm going to act like her, my version of her.
Yeah.
And just see what happens. And I came back and I did it and it worked. And then like 11th grade and 12th grade, I was class favorite. And, like I was just pretending to be my cousin. But mainly I was just like faking it until it felt right.
Yeah,
I was,
you got a tool, a socialization tool.
Yeah, I got a tool of like, I was like, oh, that's how you do it? Like
you just call people?
You just call people? Like you just talk to them? Oh, wow, you just talk to who you want to talk to and you just laugh with them?
It's so funny how fucking uncomfortable we are in high school. And sometimes like the only difference between, you know, like the cool people and the not cool people is just that. It's just
totally.
This weird fake confidence to be like, come on, let's go do the thing.
It's all it is.
My problem is I was sort of desperate. I'm like, you guys, are we going out? What are you guys doing?
Were you the guy who would plan it all?
No, but like I lived further away because I was lying about my address. And I had these guys that I really wanted to be friends with. This is the story of my life. And it, like I've been thinking about it lately about certain behavior patterns.
Yeah.
Where, because I guess I was sort of uncomfortable and I would see people that like they seem to have it together, like they seem fun or whatever. And then I would just pester them. Until, you know, I could hang out.
And was it people you had a connection with or you just thought I
eventually did. I feel like ultimately I was just sort of missing a chunk of some sort of personality thing. And I just wanted to be part of whatever that was.
Got it.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it was always sort of an annoying thing, but I didn't really know how to make friends otherwise.
Yeah.
Because I'm very intense, very thinky. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I was high maintenance, but like it was one of those things where I live far away and I make plans. Sometimes they wouldn't show up. That was the saddest thing. Waiting at the end of the driveway, all dressed up in my shoes and my Calvins or whatever.
Man, there's nothing like that to just like, ooh. I had that happen once years and years ago in LA with a friend that I really love still. And like, she just forgot we had plans.
And you're all ready to go?
Immediately shoots you back to like whatever age you were when you last felt like embarrassed or alone.
Yeah, like,
and you're
what
like,
what am I doing?
What the actual fuck is this?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And you fester about in your head and then it turns out they just forgot. You build a whole story
around
it.
Totally, you build a whole story around like, oh, well, cool. I guess I guess I'm not cool enough to hang out with.
Right. And then they're just sort of like, I just forgot. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Fucking idiot. Went back to high school. All right, so now you're cool. 11th, 12th grade, queen of the school.
Well, the cool thing is that I still was friends with everybody. Like, I still had my metal nerd friends, and I still had, like, you know, all the drama friends and like
so you figured
football
out,
friends
as
and
a funny person,
friends.
Sensitive person. It's sort of what I evolved into. It's sort of like you can get along with everybody.
Totally.
Yeah. Because you're not committed to an outfit or to a music ideology.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like you're a funny person.
Yeah, I was like the add-on. Like if the if the drill team went out and we're gonna wrap houses, I was like the one that went, even though I wasn't on the drill team.
Yeah, because
you know what
you're
I mean?
Fun.
Yeah, because I like
what's
we
wrap
laugh.
Houses.
Toilet paper houses.
You say that like,
the one time that
how many times did you do that?
Probably two or three, but like the one most fun time was the worst because like they called the cops and then like my dad was so mad.
Really?
Yeah, it was awful.
Well, you could have been worse.
Oh, it could have been so worse. I mean, that's probably why I wanted to be good. It's because I did not want like
if
anyone
you got
to
that
be mad at me. Yeah. If you got that mad at me putting
toilet paper
on a house, yeah.
So what? So when do you decide? Like, I'm going to commit my life to. Was it acting? Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, for a minute I thought I'm going to be an actress, and I'm also going to be an artist.
Which
meaning,
kind?
You know,
what do you do?
I thought I would also like draw and paint.
Oh, did you draw and paint?
I started college going like I'm going to double major in art and. Get a BFA in acting, and then you go to your first like art class, and they go like, okay, and now I don't even know what it's called after the lab or whatever,
right.
But every art class has like a 5-hour thing attached
to
it, where you actually go and do
paint.
Art.
Yeah.
And I was like, whew. Anybody got time for that? So then I became a single major, like within the first 2 weeks.
You dropped it right away.
Right away.
You're just sitting there with an easel.
Yeah.
And a bunch of like, other sort of introverted people that know what they're doing already.
Yeah, seriously.
And you're kind of looking around going like, hey, you know.
Yeah, I like to draw too. Yeah, no, I didn't like it that much.
That's the worst feeling where you're like, you know, I'm just going to try this. And your parents encourage that shit. You should try it. And you get there and these people have been doing it their whole life. You just feel like an asshole right away. And you're like, no way. No way this is happening.
Yeah. It just showed me what I liked better, for sure.
Yeah. So where'd you go?
I went to a place called Texas State.
Where is that?
It's in San Marcos, like half an hour from Austin. And yeah, I just kind of went where I got the most scholarships and stuff because we couldn't afford to like go anywhere fancy.
So it's a small school?
It's a big state school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that, but that's not, University of Texas is in Austin?
Yeah.
Right.
I like it there. Do you?
Yeah, you know, I do. You know, I call it the hipster Alamo. There's a few of these Alamo situations where you get this, you're just surrounded by whatever the rest of it is.
Yeah.
No, but I do like it. It's gotten a little bit much as time goes on.
Yeah, I've
it's
noticed
become
that
a sort
too.
Of a capital of what, I mean, it's still cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Texas. I mean, I grew up, you know, next door to Texas, and I've grown to like it. I mean, there's decent people all over.
Yeah.
And there's even some decent people that are actually shitty people.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
There's a lot of decent, shitty people around. And, you know, it's hard to reconcile, but, you know, Texas does.
Yeah, God, that is a weird thing. There are a lot of decent, shitty people.
Yeah, they're good people, but they're mind fucked in one way. And you're
right.
Like, I don't know what to do with that. And then you have to make decisions.
Totally. And I guess all you can do is just keep digging and going like, oh, let me just dig again and find that decent part of you.
The politeness thing. And then, but some people are good people. They're just a little, like, but who am I to judge? I can judge. I can judge.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people that's sort of like, that's some wrong-minded shit. You seem like a very nice person.
Yeah.
But that's part, yeah. So you just study the acting. Do you do stand-up?
Mm-mm. I've always done improv and sketch, but I've never done stand-up.
And did you start doing that stuff in college?
Mm-hmm. I started doing
improv.
Well, I mean,
improv. Outside of the cassette tape work you did with the lesbian. And the dating game. Those were early sketch
great
endeavors.
Distillation. Yeah. The cassette tape work with the lesbian.
Which we'd all love to hear. Do you have it digitized? Because I think it'd
be... I don't know. Maybe. I'll ask Jamie. She really might. She really might.
You still friends with Jamie?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
We're homies for sure.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So what's the sort of curriculum over there at the university? What do you get to do? What's the training?
It's all, you know, all the regular acting stuff, but you also have to do like, I don't know, lighting and...
Oh, right. So it's more
I don't know.
Theater,
I always thought that was so
or is it geared towards theater?
Yeah, it was definitely geared towards theater. We had one, in my opinion, the best teacher that we had there was this dude, Larry Hovis, who played Carter on Hogan's Heroes.
I remember that guy.
Yeah.
The blonde guy.
Yeah.
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 What was his, wasn't he the fix-it guy? In Hogan's Heroes, didn't he have a specific role? They all sort of represented something.
Feel like he was like a mechanic
or something. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. He could, you know, come up with the device, the gadget. Yeah. Oh, he was the guy?
He was the one that I think was the best one, for sure.
But like, Larry Hovis.
By laps.
But isn't that interesting, though? Like, there are those people, you know, these Hollywood people that had lives. And then this is how I frame it now. And then had the courage to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, stay in it somehow. My buddy Craig Anton, who was a great comic actor, like he went, you know, he just realized like, you know, this isn't going to be a life, you know, and he's got to think about the future. Went to grad school, got his like doctorate, I think, in acting and teaching.
Yeah.
And now he's teaching at a college in Georgia. It's
yeah,
like
it's
I have such respect for that.
It's awesome.
Because, you know, you're helping people. You get the joy of turning young people on in this world that's important and seeing them create. And you're not just this self-involved freak.
Totally.
Who's like, you know, waiting for someone else to make you something.
Right. And you're not gripping anymore. Like, he just felt chill. And I don't know why he came to Texas. I have no idea
probably
why.
Probably from there, no?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, but
he,
I
like
don't
he
know.
Was. Did you know him from Hogan's Heroes?
I didn't know till he told us. Like,
yeah, maybe you know me. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more just like a whisper network of like, did you know Larry was on this?
Yeah.
He was an old guy by the time he got to us.
Yeah.
But,
good teacher though.
I mean, so good. The only like one who sort of. Actually, you know what? There was another dude who I never had, this actor, G.W. Bailey. He was also awesome. But I never had him for more than, like, a day, you know? But they were the dudes who, like, actually did it and knew what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
And his class was a TV film acting class.
Hovis? And,
yeah.
Oh, so you had one of those? Because a lot of the loftier institutions don't do any film.
Totally. And that, I mean... That's all any of us wanted, really.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody, but
right.
But he would sort of famously say things to you that you were like, wait, what? That would sort of piss you off. And then years later you go, oh my God.
Like what?
Like I remember once he told me, he was like, you know what, Edie, you've got like, what you have is a like a throwback thing. It's like a Rosalind Russell thing. And I was like, in my head, in my like 19-year-old head.
You have to go look up Rosalind
Russell?
Yeah,
I was like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
I was mad.
Yeah.
And then I like found out she's from black and white movies and I was pissed off. And then years later, it took me years to like watch some of her movies because I think I was just like, I'm not that.
Yeah.
And then I watched it and she's the greatest thing ever. She's just, and she's kind of off the rails and like she's kind of a wild card. And I'm like, it's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. And I was so mad at him for it. But he would tell people things like, he told one friend of mine like, look, no one's going to understand you until you're, like, in your 30s. And she was like, what the fuck? As, you know, because she's standing there. She's 20 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And he was, like, exactly right.
Really?
She's always has had, like, an old soul thing.
Uh-huh.
And, like, people started to really understand her later. And, like, yeah,
it's
he
wild.
Just knew stuff.
I talked to Bruce Dern, and I haven't heard these kind of stories. This seems to be a new thing. Bruce Dern, he's great. He's singular. But, you know, he was in the actors, I think the Actor Studio in New York early on, and when in the 50s, and he had been a runner, like he went to the Olympics.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Ilya Kazan took a liking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's training at the Actor Studio because they think, you know, he's raw and they wanted to really make him into something. But Kazan says, you're never going to be a leading man. And Dern's like, I'm 25. Why would she tell me that?
Yeah, God.
And Kazan goes, because you're a runner. And he's like, I don't run anymore. He goes, but you have persistence, you know, endurance.
Wow.
You have endurance. That was
wow.
It. So like how you frame that as a 25-year-old, like what does that mean? Sounds horrible.
It sounds horrible.
But he like, you know, he realizes that, you know, if you look back at his career, that was it. He also told him he'd be, I don't know if it was the fifth or the seventh. He said, you're going to be the fifth cowboy on the right.
Oh, that's so brutal.
Right, yeah, but it was sort of to encourage him to make it, you know, to make sure you stand out.
Yeah.
And he certainly does.
Yeah.
But it's weird. It's hard to hear that kind of shit when
it
you're
is,
younger.
Because you don't know, you don't know it's cooler to be the runner. You don't know, at that age, you're like,
or what it
leading
means.
Man is the best thing.
Yeah,
why would you say I'm not the best thing?
Right. It
yeah,
is
but
cooler
you don't know,
to be
like,
the runner.
Oh, it's way cooler to be the runner.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can keep doing that.
Yeah, and you can keep being different.
Leading men just eventually buckle and crumble. You know, everyone's going to get old.
Yeah, and it's so dependent on like, better do that same thing again.
Right. Yeah, and then next thing you know, you're William Holden in the Wild Bunch, and in Network. but that was a good story. You know, like I mean, he was a huge leading man. And then he played these kind of like flawed old dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's sort of nice to have access to a guy that, because those TV actors from that era, it was still sort of the studio system. All those people were still around. All the lots still existed. It was still a small community. So like he probably had met Rosalind Russell at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So he gave you, like, you just liked the guy? He was matter of fact.
He was chill. He was funny.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to be trying. Which
yeah.
In the moment, I knew I liked that, but I didn't know how to articulate that. And then, like, as my life goes on, I'm like, oh, God, it's the key to everything is to allow instead of to try.
Oh, man. I'm getting hit with that now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a biggie.
I don't know if I ever really thought about it that way. Because like my instinct is to, you know, to like out of anxiety mm-hmm. to kind of like.
Sure.
Like I did it yesterday mm-hmm. and it fucking pissed me off.
With what?
I was on Conan, you mm-hmm. know, and I'd done Conan a million times and we have a dynamic that goes back like 25 years, you yeah. know, and but I'm really not quite that guy anymore in my life and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that dynamic, I felt it happening again. I walked out of it going like, why did I drop back into that?
Right.
You know, like I started to realize that like I'm not desperate anymore.
Right.
But the business is very desperate. Mm-hmm. All these shows that you do. You know, not, I'm not saying like the shows you're on, but talk shows or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They're all just sort of like, come on, would you look at it? Stay right. here. Don't change it. You know, we got, and I'm not like, I'm not, you're entering a desperate environment.
Totally. You know what? I was thinking about this because I was listening to you with Stephen Root yesterday and you were talking about that. You were like, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah.
I don't feel stressed out. I don't even know what yeah. I'm wearing. It's going to be what it's going to be. And I literally was on a run listening to it and out loud going, yes. Oh, yes.
That was for Corden probably? Was
that yeah, that was for Corden.
Not great.
Because, man, it's the ideal mindset. But yeah, when you're around the thing where everyone else feels like it should be pressury and trying, it's hard to convince your brain, like, oh, wait, I know better than this right
yeah,
now.
There's no breathing room, and that's just the way it is, and I know that, and I can do those things. But with Corden, yeah, I just kind of, I was loose. Mm-hmm. But then you get out there, and there's this, like, you know, before you go on, they're doing, you know, human bar tricks. So they got someone blowing milk out of their tear duct, and then they got someone juggling, and then let's bring our guests on. I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, my God.
And there's two of you sitting there, and you're trying to be casual, but there's no way, and I'm so used to doing this.
Right.
And they don't, there's no way in their minds they believe or can do. Even Conan now with his new format, where it's just kind of like you're just hanging out.
Yeah.
You can't, there's no way to execute a real conversation. So the trick of it is, how do you compress, you know, who you are? And like, it's very, even in acting, it's hard for me because like I'm waiting. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a whole lifetime of like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And like, it takes a couple takes, you know? So when I get out there, usually I'm like, and then it's sort of like, oh, okay, all right, now that's out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I like, I'm done with it. I did all this press for this movie and for Glow, and I'm like, I don't need to do it for a while.
Yeah.
Are you doing the shows? Are you doing Conan?
I'm doing my first one ever later in September.
That'll be fun.
I'm doing Seth Meyers, yeah.
Oh, really?
I've heard it's a good first one.
No, it's great because, you know, he's like, he does his, like, he's a very interesting guy because at first I was sort of like, what's he going to do? But he's very kind of grounded mm-hmm. and he's pretty effortless mm-hmm. with funny, but he's not all about funny.
Yeah, I like that he seems to actually look in someone's eyes.
Yeah, no, he's great. Know? Yeah, yeah. Oh, good. That'll be fun. Yeah. How come you're not doing the other ones?
Well, that's my first one I've ever done. And I think most of them have a thing of like, well, once she's done one, then we'll
take a look at her.
Yeah, totally. So I think that'll open up.
And then
up
the ones that are in the same time slot, they're going to be mad.
Sure.
Yeah, like if you do Fallon, you got to choose. You can do Fallon, Colbert, or Kimmel.
Right.
And if you do one, then you got to wait a year, 6 months.
That's what I've been being explained about.
And it's crazy.
Like, oh, wow, interesting.
It's just crazy, though.
Yeah.
Like there's not enough people. You can't. No, I mean, like, you can't put someone on that. You just do a different thing. Anyway, doesn't matter.
But yeah, I think I'll probably do a couple more. The season of the show just started
I watched
days
all
ago.
Of them.
Oh, you did? Well, you watched the first six, probably.
The first six.
Great.
How many are there?
Nine.
There's nine.
And wowie, do they get intense in those last few
months? I want to get to that. So you hang around, what, you move to Austin? What do you do after college? When does it, you know, when do you like go, I'm going to the, I'm going to Hollywood?
Yeah, I wasn't in Austin very long, just a minute. And then I kind of always knew you have to move to one of the places to do it as your job.
Mm-hmm. And New York or LA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I moved to LA in like 2001, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been out here a while.
Yeah. And just started immediately doing stuff, improvising with Impro Theater, which we now do like full-length improvised plays.
Oh, yeah?
Like the Broad Stage and places that with sets and costumes and stuff.
But wow.
So we'll do certain styles. We'll do a run of like Jane Austen unscripted or we'll do Twilight Zone unscripted.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll get a suggestion and do an hour and a half play.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. I think you would dig it because it's not, it's very story and acting based.
Yeah.
It's inherently funny because it's asinine to make up
right.
a play. But everyone's just meaning what they say and trying to make a good story happen.
That's great.
So,
and sometimes it works and sometimes it's hit or miss, or how's it go?
I mean,
usually you nail it.
Luckily, it almost always works. And I think it's because
there's a weird ESP
with that.
Sure.
Yeah, and you can always, like, I don't know. I think that ultimately, always the truth is the funniest thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you just know what your character is and you stay in it. You don't know what your character is until the play starts, because nothing's
right.
set. But
yeah, I mean, I just improvised a movie and I love it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but
I Sort of Trust?
Yeah.
It's funny.
Awesome.
I mean, it, because there's something about improvising that is real
totally.
In the moment. So the whole flow of it feels different.
Totally. And if you know, like, I mean, I'm sure you felt this. If you know
well,
who story. That guy is
yeah.
that you're playing,
yeah.
you could kind of go forever.
Sure.
Yeah.
And also that, you know, you have the story structure,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of can just move through it and you go deeper with the guy as it goes along because mm-hmm. you get to know him almost.
Yeah. 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 That's the greatest when you say something and you go, oh, I guess that's who he is.
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I guess
yeah.
that. I guess
okay
I have that
with
trait.
Him being that.
yeah.
So you came out here in 2001 and did you have an in or did you just sort of like,
mm-mm.
I'm here, now what?
Yeah, I had two friends who lived here.
Yeah.
My friend Kendra and my friend Christy, and I stayed on their couch for a month.
Yeah.
In Burbank, and then we got a place.
Perfect.
In Studio City.
Did you hear McGuire's story about coming out here? On here? Did you hear me talk to Danny? It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's insane.
And then, yeah, there was a chunk of time where he was back and bartending and like, yeah, it's awesome. but yeah, and then we got a place in Studio City, and then we had a weird like house in Studio City that four of us lived in that we would have. I don't even know how it happened,
mm-hmm.
but each of us would invite everyone we knew. We would have a party and invite everyone we knew. So I would invite everyone I'd ever met in any improv class ever. My friend Kendra was like cocktail waitressing, so there would be like giant amounts of people I forget. I think she was working at either the Ice House or the Comedy Store.
Oh,
or
really?
Something. Yeah. The other two would invite, and so we would have these giant like 90s movie style parties.
Yeah.
Where like it was wall to wall in this weird house.
I've been to those, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even understand how it happened.
And there'd be like one celebrity there?
Maybe.
And you sort
yeah,
of, like,
but it would
you
be
just see the one celebrity head, like who knows that guy?
But it would be like something weird, like
right.
This guy was never at our party, but I remember we saw him somewhere once. The guy who played Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell. It would be like that.
Yeah, yeah. I was once at a party where it was all packed out and I just saw John C. Reilly's head. And I'm like, oh, who's that guy? It was years ago. I think it was like Dave Cross's house or somebody in West Field.
Oh, like, man. But yeah, I lived with them and was improvising and doing stuff. And right when I moved here, I also started at the Groundlings and then was working my way up through there. And
did you do that?
Yeah, I'm in the main company.
Now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're a Groundling.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So you started, so you were doing the improv, the other thing, but you got into the Groundlings. You knew that was a thing.
Yeah, I think I knew that was a thing, like, maybe from high school, just from online, you know, looking at
stuff. I didn't
realize
that. So you went through the whole thing, the whole process?
Yeah, you got to go through all the stuff and
who were
voted on. And
well, I don't know what generation are you, like, who was in your troupe?
So my generation is, like, my sort of senior group when I was in the Sunday company before I became a Groundling were me and my pal Drew Droege and my pal Mikey Day, who's at SNL
Mikey Day.
Right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. Now,
yeah.
Were you ever looked at for SNL?
Yeah, I went and tested in maybe 2009 or something like that.
Good experience? Bad?
Oh, like so weird.
Yeah, it's
because I found out like a day and a half before.
Oh.
And everyone else knew they were going like 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so it was that weird thing of like
characters together. And
yeah, which I had a ton of, but I was like writing on the plane.
Yeah.
And then like trying to memorize in a hotel room.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it was just very, very weird. And then I went and guest wrote. They came to like a showcase.
Yeah.
Later, and I went and guest wrote. I don't know when that was. Maybe like 2015. Whatever Seth's last year as the head writer was.
Uh-huh.
I did like a 2 week thing, and got something on both weeks, which was cool because I felt like I got to have the whole experience of like a live thing.
But they didn't keep you, or how'd that go?
Well, they called back a few times, to like check my availability,
right?
But one of the times I was still under contract, I think, to this the sitcom I had done with Kelsey Grammer, Martin Lawrence.
Which one was that?
It was called Partners.
Yeah.
It was the last of those weird 1090 things.
Yeah.
Where they would do 10 episodes instead of a pilot. And then they would go like, well, if this goes, we'll make 90 of them.
Yeah.
It was that thing.
Oh, the syndicated weird. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we just did 10 of them, but I think we were waiting to know what happened with that. And then the next time
that's
I was
the worst
doing,
feeling, though, to be stuck in something that you just took. You know, and then you have this one, the other thing that you really want to do, and it's like holding you.
Well, it was weird because I just felt, I had such a strong feeling of like, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. You do.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't.
Yeah, because then it's like, well, this is a bad reason.
Yeah, sometimes you feel that. The second time they called to check my avail, I was doing the second season of Vice Principals, and that, I was like, oh, fuck, does everything happen for a reason? Because I was so happy doing that.
Vice Principal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks, man.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you're like, fuck SNL.
I don't know if I was like, fuck SNL, but I felt like, oh, that's fine. I'm happy. I'm so happy doing what I'm doing.
You don't need to. That's great.
Yeah.
Because you know, after a time and after, you know, you've had some experience and you seem to have done a lot of episodic work and everything else, like you were no stranger to it. That, you know, entering the SNL world is its own thing.
Yeah,
and it's not always a great experience for people. And you're sort of at the whim of, you know, Lauren and whatever the situation is. It could really work out, or it could be horrible. It's a hyper competitive environment.
Totally.
And you're already doing this show where you're taking comedy to a level they could never take it.
And like you get to do things on a show like that you would never get to do anywhere else.
I mean, that show is like, it's almost incomprehensible. Mm-hmm. You know, Eastbound and Down is another thing. It seems that crew, McGuire and what's the other guy's name? Green and Jody Hill.
Sorry, every time you say that, I'm pausing because I'm like, oh, is he talking about someone I don't know?
Who is it?
No, but it's because when you say McGuire, I know you mean McBride.
McBride,
but
oh, McBride, Danny McBride.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm an idiot.
No, I'm sorry if my eyes are sort of like.
You should correct me because I'm old. Now I feel bad.
No, don't.
McBride. Now I'm going to have to put a correction in for the earlier mistake. Danny McBride. So it was McBride, Jody Hill, and what's the other guy's name?
David Gordon Green.
Mm-hmm. Because they seem to do what you know, like Breaking Bad or what in the other show, like these sort of like groundbreaking shows that take the medium a different place with comedy, mm-hmm. where like you're seeing things that you've never seen before. There's situations where it's like, what the fuck is this? Where does this come from?
Yeah.
So it has no, it's its own context that
totally.
What they do.
Oh man, I totally agree.
So before we get to that though, so what do? You kick around, you get an agent, you're doing the Groundlings, and it looks like you did a lot of episodic stuff.
Yeah, like, you know, just getting whatever I could.
Yeah.
You know, I had some really lame agents, and then I weirdly did this movie. I had done this sketch and improv show on and off for a year in Vegas.
Yeah, oh really?
Kind of back and forth. This thing that Rita Rudner and her husband produced called Boo, and it was this late night.
I like her.
Yeah, she's so nice.
But it was a live thing?
Yeah, it was this live thing that we would go on after her and do like this weird sort of like almost scary improv.
How long did you
and
do
sketch
it for?
Show. Like on and off for a year. It was this thing where they were like, come do this for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And we were like, great. Then they were
every
like,
night?
I think we had Mondays and Sundays
what?
Off. Yeah. For a while, it was just Mondays off. It was very like
and you were
Broadway
in Vegas.
Style. Yeah, in Vegas. And then it just kept like it was selling well. So they were like, do 6 more.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of thing where you would sometimes have subs in for
good.
A while. Yeah, it was decent. And it was the first thing that I was like, oh, cool. This is how I make my money. Even if I need to like make
performing.
This stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's and I'm, you know, I'm living so frugally. Like, this is how I'm going to make my money.
Right.
Now. So that was super cool in that way. But anyway, we made this movie with them after this very indie movie.
Yeah.
About a family over like three or four Thanksgivings. And yeah, I went and met Rita's agent at the time through that. And then from then on had like really nice, awesome agents.
Yeah.
But I had terrible ones before that.
So you went with him, that agent?
Yeah.
Rita's agent? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's great because she's great.
Yeah, actually. She's great. I'm not with him anymore, right. But I love him forever.
But it got you into the game.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
There's something on here that I've never seen before that you did a bunch of episodes.
What?
Was it an animated thing? Or?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I've done a bunch of episodes of this thing, We Bear Bears.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's this really cool Cartoon Network show. It's one of those that's for kids, but it's actually really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do this other one at Cartoon Network now called The Fungies. And same thing, the guy who writes it is so funny.
They're fun. Yeah. Anything that you can just do voices on. Because it's so weird. I'm doing a movie, and it's amazing how physical you get when you're just doing voices. Totally. It's wild. It happens naturally.
What kind? Are you an animal or a person?
An animal.
Yeah.
I've been quite a few animals.
Yeah.
I was a person once on Metalocalypse. I was a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
On Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I was a hermit crab on Tony Hale's new show.
What animal are you in this? Can you say or no?
Yeah, I'm a snake.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like Disney. You don't have to go, say, how's it going? You know.
So it's not full Jungle Book.
No. They want you to be you.
Yeah.
So how does that happen? Because that's really, I think, the first time I really saw you was with Vice Principals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd watched most of Eastbound and Down, but Vice Principals was just too fucking much. Like, I had to watch all of those.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so how do you get, because there's a very specific bunch that, I don't know how he chooses people or what the process is or how he found you, but like in this season, your character, like I'm at a point where you just start singing.
Mm-hmm.
I won't spoil it anymore because that's towards the end of the ones I had.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got Goggins in there and mm-hmm. Goodman and Adam Devine and him and McBride himself. But then there's always these ones where you're like, where'd they find the ex-Satanist guy?
Oh, right. Yes.
What is it? Like how that guy owns the screen. It's sort of like, what's happening?
That's crazily. That's my friend Tony, who is a groundling with me. Who weirdly, I went to a dinner with Danny after he had done like, you know, all the casting stuff.
Yeah.
And we were at a dinner with like eight people or whatever. And he was like, oh yeah, I think we figured out who Keefe is going to be. It's this dude, Tony Cavallaro. And I was like, what? I mean, how random is that when like someone you know gets cast unbeknownst to you on the show you're on?
So he's not like that at all.
No, he's a pretty like high energy dude.
It's crazy. That's kind of a crazy character.
But I think he got that role in a similar way to that I got Vice Principals,
which is
just went and auditioned.
So that's how you met those guys.
Yeah, I went. Sherry Thomas was casting it, and she had me in, and I didn't know Danny and Jody Hill were going to be there.
Yeah,
I just thought it was a regular like go in, get on tape, send it to them, and they were there, and. I had done this weird commercial, like the tiniest thing in a Toyota commercial years before that Jody directed.
Yeah.
And I walked in, he was like, oh, hey, Edie. And I was like, what? You remember that thing?
Yeah.
But I didn't know Danny at all, and I only kind of knew Jody.
Had you watched Eastbound?
Yeah, I loved all their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I came in and I assumed I would be reading with Danny since he was there. And I was like, okay, so cool. So we'll read it together. And he goes, no, and you'll be reading with Sherry. So I just did the scene with Sherry in front of them. And I improvised a little bit. And yeah, that's how that happened. And then we got on set and had such a weirdly instant comedy chemistry.
You and McBride?
Yeah.
Where he's just annoyed and, you know, kind of like.
Yeah, like it just was so immediate that he morphed the whole second season. I was supposed to do, I think, 3 episodes in the first season.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, he just kept morphing it, which was so the best thing ever. It's the best thing ever in life.
He just built, there was a big arc in the second season with you?
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because you guys are so fucking funny together?
Yeah, we just had such a good time together.
Now, how
He's
much-
such a fucking funny, smart dude.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's very unique, and it's very, he's one of the few guys that can be, you know, the most colossal asshole and still be endearing. That's always been my favorite kind of comedic character.
Oh, man, me too.
Where, like, they're such assholes, but you know at heart they're their own worst enemy, and there's no way they're going to get out of their own way.
Yeah, they're just so hurt, like, deep down, they're so wounded.
So, how much improvising is involved with that, with, like, vice principals, really?
Like, a fair amount in the doing. Like, we oftentimes would get how it's scripted, but then, you know, if it was Danny and I in a scene or whatever, it would usually open up a little bit into other things. But it's, you know, as you know, it's not the kind of improvising where it's like, let's think of funny jokes.
No. Yeah.
It's just being that person and letting the truth happen.
Yeah.
Which every now and then, yeah, would.
But mostly scripted.
Yeah. Yeah, there was always room to find stuff.
I think what's very funny about the characters, like in this one too, in the Gemstones, with the Righteous Gemstones, mm-hmm. is that there's some sort of bizarro sexuality going on. For, like, your sexual drive shaft is somehow, like, way fucked up in a good way. But just like in Vice Principals, it was just the obsessive kind of, like, hungry thing.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's, like, a little more angry somehow.
Yeah, it's a little more angry and frustrated.
Yeah. And you've got this weird kind of, like, impotent-ish husband who doesn't quite... And you're kind of ass-obsessed somehow.
Yeah, weirdly ass-obsessed. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they're probably into some kink. Judy and BJ.
Right. But it happens spontaneously. Like, it just happens fitting their characters.
Yes.
But when you saw this script, they just called you up and offered you this thing?
Yeah, so after Vice Principals, Danny and I had written a movie and then kind of another one. Yeah, we wrote this thing for me, actually, that he'll direct at some point. We just haven't figured out who's going to make it and when to do it.
Right.
And just discovered we wrote really well together.
Yeah.
And he, kind of in the process of us writing stuff, he had thought of the Gemstones.
Yeah.
And, asked me to play Judy, his sister, and then later asked me to come write for the season.
So you're writing too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm watching the first one. You got pretty high expectations comedically out of this crew. And I was like, this is kind of like just setting up a story and, like, when's the weird shit happen? And then it happens, you know?
Then it happens.
Yeah, then it happens and it keeps happening. I just like the idea that these stuntmen are just, these stunt people are just unkillable.
I know.
Like, you know, after the first time, I don't want to give away anything, but after the first encounter where they get, you know, killed.
It's so violent.
Yeah, it's just horrendous. And then they're like,
I know. I mean, they're messed up. They're bloody, but it's like, they made it?
Yeah, but there's just like this attitude they have, you know, like sort of like, I'm all right, you know? Like,
Yeah.
It's a very funny kind of like world to have characters from, like Hollywood stunt people.
Yeah, totally. That used to make us laugh a lot. Like, oh, what is that like? What's the mindset of that?
Yeah.
Like, there's bound to be a ton of great people in it, but there's bound to be some douches as well.
Oh, no.
Let's highlight some douches.
They're kind of crazy people.
Sure.
You know, like I read a book about the Wild Bunch, Peckinpah's Wild Bunch, the making of it. And there's like a whole crew there. They're just like, they're crazy. Their motorcycles are jumping off of things. The life they live is hard.
Yeah.
And I don't want to generalize, but it seems like you got to be a certain ilk.
Totally.
And that guy, who's the guy that plays that guy? The stunt guy.
Scott MacArthur.
Oof, he's funny.
Yeah, he is.
Where's he from?
He did a bunch of seasons on the Mick and was a writer for it too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's done a ton of other stuff, but that was his main thing before this.
Yeah, I love it. It's really getting good. And I saw the coming attractions for it. And then I thought, like, did they re-edit some of the press screeners or no? I didn't realize that there were three more.
Yeah.
Now that I got to wait for, like everyone else.
Yeah. I think they get really, really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And I'm excited about it. So now you've got this movie written in the waiting to do.
Yeah.
With McBride.
Yeah. And we'll do it at some point.
And what else are you working on?
I did Ryan Johnson's new flick that comes out on Thanksgiving, that Knives Out, that murder mystery thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is a crazy, like, old school, full-on murder mystery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I did that. I did a thing in the new Between Two Ferns movie, and I did did this movie Troop Zero that I think is coming out soon.
What is that?
It's this thing. Allison Janney and Viola Davis are the leads of it, and it's sort of a kind of a Bad News Bears Girl Scout troop.
Oh.
And it's the movie revolves around a ton of kids, but it's the woman who wrote it, Lucy Alibar, also wrote like Beasts of the Southern Wild. And so it's got this like almost Spielberg-y vibe.
Oh, wow.
Where it feels like, oh, this is a cool movie for adults.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's
you're still
magical.
Doing the improv and everything?
Yeah. Did a improvised one-person show last night.
How was it?
Yeah. It went great. Thank God. I get so jacked out nervous before that show. And that's not
this is the theater one, the where you make up plays?
No. This one is one I do at the Groundlings sometimes that's just literally a one-person show that's improvised with one person. And it's, I play all the characters and the audience.
I gotta come see this shit.
How come I don't go to
the Groundlings?
I don't know. I'll tell you when to come.
Yeah, do. Do you have my number?
I don't know. Let's write it down.
Well, we can do it off mic.
Great. Actually, can you write it with that Sharpie so we can hear the numbers on the page?
Yeah, absolutely. God forbid I have a regular pen. Now, is your husband in show business?
Yeah, he's the AD of that group, Impro Theater.
Oh, okay.
And he is a writer. He wrote a book that's out recently about how improv integrating into your life and how it can help your life. Because, you know, basically it's just like...
People skills. Get your people skills.
Yeah, it's a cool life philosophy to just be in the moment and want what you have and like...
And speak up.
Be open. Yeah, be open to what's happening instead of like going way into your head. And
allow as opposed to... What would you say? What did you say?
Allowing as opposed to trying.
Oh, yeah.
That man, oh man, I have to do so many mental gymnastics before that show I did last night, that improvised one person thing.
Get into it?
My brain goes fucking crazy.
What does it do?
Just awful nerves of like, oh my God, it's sold out. There's so many people here. I don't know what this is going to be. Like, right. I'm about to make this up. What am I doing?
Right.
Why did I agree to this again? Like, what am I doing? And then I literally have to go to a place in my head where I go, I thought of this the second or third time I did it. I had been home in Texas for like a month and a half because my dad got sick. He had a couple of strokes, and it was a fucking hard time.
Yeah,
and I came back because I was scheduled to do that show.
Yeah,
and I remember driving there and going like, "Oh my God!" Like almost out of my body, nervous. And I remember the only thing that calmed me down was thinking, "Well, nobody knows when they're gonna die. I could die later tonight. All I have is this. Let it rip." And I've found that that's a very helpful philosophy in most of life. Because then you can just be where you are and whatever happens, happens. Let's see what happens.
Nice.
And usually it's better than you thought.
Yeah.
Whatever thing, whether it's going to get coffee.
Right.
Doing this. Yeah. Doing a show. Like, if you just go like, fuck it, I don't know. Let's see.
Well, I think you've probably always had this. And it's probably what got you through that existential crisis in fourth grade.
Maybe. I don't know. Thank goodness.
It's great talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
Edie Patterson, what a sweetheart. So funny. I just, big fan. The Righteous Gemstones on HBO, new episode Sunday nights. And now I will play my Stratocaster for you.
Boomer lives.